From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. For this week's episode, we have a group of very special guests with us. As you guys know, for season 16, we've been bringing on other content creators who are doing actual good work in the space so that we can highlight their work and let them tell their stories about their journeys. And this week, there's a new podcast that just hit the airwaves where a group of high school students who I happen to be familiar with launched their podcast, The Underestimated Podcast. Episode 1 just dropped this Wednesday. And this group of podcasters, they are my students in my investigative journalism class at Brandywine High School in Niles, Michigan. And they've been working really hard throughout this entire year to do their investigations and to create the podcasts that are now starting to air. They're going to be coming out over the next 15 weeks. And I'm joined by some of the group leaders today so they can talk about this process and what it's been like for them. As far as I know, this is the first podcast of its kind created by completely from beginning to end by teenagers, high school students. So I'm going to work around the table like I'm dealing cards and let you introduce yourselves. So tell them your name, just your first name, and your year.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm a senior at Brandywine.
My name is Gracie, and I'm a junior.
My name is Lexi, and I'm a junior.
My name is Alexandra, and I'm a senior.
All right, we're going to have just an informal conversation about what this process has been like for you guys. And Alexandra, I'm going to start with you, because your group is the one that won the race and launched their first episode first this past Wednesday. So what's the process been like for you this year? Like from the beginning of the class, what were you expecting when you came into the first day of investigative journalism class? Did you know what you were getting into?
I really didn't know what I was getting into. A lot of people had talked about this class, about being an easy A, which is not why I joined. I'm genuinely interested in investigating cases and trying to figure out things that are bigger than me and, you know, bigger than this high school and bigger than Brandywine. And I think the things that we're doing in this class can transcend into our adult life.
So once we, especially after we shifted from doing all the information gathering and investigative work and started creating the podcast, did you still feel like it was an easy A?
Definitely not. I feel like I really wanted to take the reins and go off with our group and be a leader and try and figure out what we had to do and direct people and tell them what to do. And it's been a process trying to figure out how to incorporate everybody's ideas equally and put everybody's differing ideas together in a way that would make sense to an audience listening to a podcast. Even though we've all had our differences and the things that we've been working on are kind of difficult and we've gotten stressed, but ultimately I think we have learned a lot about group work and working together and incorporating everybody's ideas in a way that I don't know how to express it.
No, that's all right. But you know, that's another big thing too that makes this podcast unique is, so there's lots and lots of true crime podcasters out there. Lots of people do what I do and things like what you guys are doing. But one thing that most of them don't do, I don't think any of them do as far as I know, is collaborate with a group of 5 to 6 people that are all supposed to have equal input to create a script and to do the recordings and do the editings and make choices about everything from music to timing and everything like that. That's not easy. I'm going to move over to you, Gracie, since you're in front of one of the microphones. Gracie's a student I've had for 2 years. Actually, Gracie was one of my intro students last year. Gracie, you want to talk about what has this process been like for you?
It has been a lot of trial and error and just trying things out. While I was here last year, I was just doing broadcasting, learning the software and how to edit and things like that. So I wasn't doing the investigative journalism aspect of this. So I sort of started fresh with everyone else, and it was much different than what I expected. I always sort of knew, because I had experience with editing and I felt like I had the most opportunity to take leadership in my group, I always figured that I would end up being the leader, but I didn't realize just how difficult that would be.
Yeah.
I didn't have as much of an issue with so many conflicting opinions as much as I did no one giving their opinion.
Right. Yeah, it is, and it's always one or the other when you're working in groups. Like a lot of people want to sit back and say, okay, tell me what to do. Especially, you know, in your age group, that's kind of what you guys have been trained to do, right? All through high school, you go into class and your teacher just tells you what to do. And this might have been your first, if not one of your first experiences where you guys came in and how did we start every class at the beginning of the semester?
How are you going to move your case forward today?
Right. I came in every day and asked you guys to tell me what you're going to do. And that's a very different experience. Stephanie, what's it been like for you?
It's been sort of challenging, especially because, you know, when this group first started, I wasn't a leader. But sometimes our first leader was like really busy because she's in like 10 clubs,
right?
Which is understandable. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have that mindset of I am a leader. So it was more of just nobody really knew what we wanted to do that day. So I was just like, okay, so we need to get this done and this done. And it just kind of happened. So I just got here. It just kind of sort of happened.
You know, I want to swing this back to Allie in regards to that, because one thing that I always feel when I'm creating a podcast, especially very complicated ones like what you guys are putting together, I'm having you guys put together the most complicated type of podcast, which is a combination of narration and interviews and things that are being cut in. It's a tough edit. And for me, it always kind of feels like I'm juggling and I have a million balls in the air all at the same time. And then all of a sudden at the end, like that moment we hit yesterday when we finished it and it comes together, like, how did you feel yesterday when we sat down in front of the class and played your actual full episode with everything together?
It was just so unreal to hear everybody's voices together with the editing and the ads, and just to imagine that people are out there listening to our voices and what we have to say about these cases. It was just mind-blowing, honestly. Like, I just had to sit there and listen, because it's honestly so weird to hear my own voice, but...
Yeah.
I think that was the worst part, but I like what we put together, and I'm really proud of our group.
Yeah, I'm proud of you guys, too. And Lexi, how about you? You're working on the Stephen Craft case. What has this experience been like for you?
It's been a really good experience being able to figure out how to work with people, especially with figuring out what ideas need to go where and how to organize them. Organization has been one of the key parts for me, because dealing with that many people and everything they want it's a big task. And even if we all agreed on something, finding a way to put it all together in a way that makes sense for us and for other people to understand, it's a lot. But thankfully, we have the amount of people, which gives us different ears, different eyes on what we're doing. So working in groups helps with that, being able to understand different perspectives and ways to do things, to understand the case, to understand how you're going to put it out there, how you're going to write, how you're going to speak. Yeah, the group work helped a lot.
So one of my jobs as a CTE, or career and technical education teacher, is I try to keep in the forefront in our lesson planning, not just to teach you guys how to be investigative journalists, because you're not all going to be investigative journalists, but also to try to teach you life skills that you can take forward regardless of what career path you take. Do you feel like you've learned some things that you can use in the future?
Definitely. Even if we're not going to use it in the future, we still learned stuff. For example, like, let's say our original plan didn't go as planned, we still have other skills that we can try to implement. So with this group specifically, we learned team building, which was very difficult, because we were kind of just pushed with all these different people with all these different personalities. And so we kind of had to learn to adapt to each other, just try to work through it. So this is definitely a skill I can see all of us taking in to wherever we go.
Yeah, I feel like it's been really interesting to watch and fun to watch how some of you guys have really kind of come out of your shells. I'll swing it over to Gracie for a minute. So when I met Gracie last year, and this was just my perception of Gracie, but she was very, very quiet. She was definitely willing to sit in her spot in the room. She always did good work, but was never going to step out of her comfort zone unless she was made to. And so far, she's participated in podcast interviews, this interview. She spoke in front of our school board. I've just seen like some incredible boldness with Stephanie and with you, that you guys have really stepped out of your comfort zone. What's that? Do you feel like you've grown just as a person throughout this process?
Definitely. Last year when I took your broadcasting class. That was actually my first year coming back to Brandywine in general. I did online schooling before that. So I was like entirely a hermit. I didn't leave the house. I didn't like talking to people. Unless it was online, I pretty much didn't do it. So in so many ways, your class was an opportunity for me. I met so many new friends. I learned so many new skills. And as a result, I'm really proud of the person I am today.
I am too. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
We just had another one of our students join. The fun thing about doing that, we're actually in, I didn't think I mentioned this, we're not in my studio, we were in our school studio, and all these students have other things going on, and one of the group leaders from the Jeanette Robertson case just finally joined us after sneaking out of band class. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Chelsea, and I'm a sophomore.
Now that you're here, I'm going to put you on the spot, because I kind of wanted to go around and talk about the cases that you're going to cover without giving away too many spoilers. So the people listening right now on Wednesday got to hear the first episode where Alexandra's group is covering the Skelton Brothers case. But we have four other cases that are going to be coming. They're each doing three episodes. Chelsea, tell us a little bit about your case and what we can expect.
The case I'm working on is the case of Jeanette Robertson. She was a 27-year-old woman, and she was murdered back in 1983. And her case, she was brutally murdered, and the whole case is just really weird. There's such odd components factoring in. She was murdered broad daylight in the place of her work. And it's weird because nobody saw the murderer leave. Nobody saw like anything that could kind of help further this case, apparently. But it's just like a really odd case.
Yeah, it's a shocking that it's been over 40 years and it's unsolved. And this, yeah, it happened in the basement of the downstairs area of an operating business in the middle of business hours. And it was a brutal homicide. And in that particular case, your group has gotten to do some pretty cool things. We got to actually go up to Reed City, Michigan, and visit the crime scene and do a walk. Stephanie, you want to talk a little bit? Stephanie is also the same group. Talk a little bit about what that experience was like, actually going to Reed City and meeting family members of the victims and going to the crime scene.
It was kind of nerve-wracking and a little scary and ominous, especially when we went to the actual crime scene down there. I think it's because we had that mindset, like we knew what happened there. And so it was kind of scary. And also like it was very poorly lit and everything is supposed to be like most relatively the same. And so we were just like standing there where she was. And we also got to meet the loved ones. We got to interview them and just all the grief they're going through, just knowing that one of their loved ones was murdered and they still have no idea why or who it was, even after like 40 plus years.
All right, I'm going to swing it over to Lexi. Lexi, tell us a little about the case that you're going to be covering.
My case covers Stephen Kraft, a missing 12-year-old boy from Benton Township, Michigan in the year of 2001. Actually, this year, February 15th, was the 24th anniversary of when he went missing. It's been that long. And there really hasn't been any updates. It's still an open case, but there haven't been any public releases of any information.
Yeah, your case is one of the toughest ones because everybody's done a lot of work with filing FOIA requests. The students have done that all on their own and done all this research. And the case, unfortunately, that Lexi has and her group is covering, we haven't been able to get anything. Open records requests have been ignored or fully redacted. They just, and other content creators, we've made contact with Nina Instead and Josh Hallmark and other people that have worked on the case. And so you guys have had very little to go on as far as records go, but you have been able to make contact with some family members at least.
Mm-hmm. We were able to talk to Stephen's sister, Jody, and Stephen's cousin, Jason. They both gave us a lot of information, a lot more than we would have known if we weren't able to talk to them. talking to family members is a very important aspect to this. And without them, we wouldn't be as far as we've gotten.
Yeah. And it's a big thing to do for the first time, or anytime you're doing or talking to a family member of a victim. I'm going to speak for Monse, who is the group leader for one of the other groups, wasn't able to make it today. She had a meeting, but she's covering what started as an investigation into the disappearance of a woman named Janice Sanders, who was actually a former Brandywine High School student who disappeared after leaving work years and years ago back in the 70s. And then through that investigation, they found out that the prime suspect in that case had another ex-girlfriend go missing in the same way 2 years prior to that. So the same person, they believe, you know, people believe, was maybe responsible for both of these disappearances and likely murders. And so they've done a ton of work on that case, but they also went and talked to they've talked to victims' family members too, but we actually went out to the scene to talk to the suspect's son. And that was it was interesting to watch. Everybody was so jazzed up, and they wrote a bunch of questions for him, and they were kind of drawing straws to see who got to be the one to do the interview until they sat down and had a real human in front of them that they had to ask hard questions to. And then it was freeze up, you know, and it was a lot of encouraging to get them to go. And then once they got going, it went well. But it's a different experience having to talk to somebody that was involved in an actual tragedy like this.
Mm-hmm. You have to be, it's understanding the humanity and the sensitivity behind it while still understanding that you have things to do. You have information you need, and trying to figure out a way to ask that in a way that's still sensitive to them being human, to them still being affected by this today is it's a process. Understanding how people work, how much things can affect a person.
All right, we're going to move on to Gracie. Your group is kind of unique in the fact that you guys are covering a whole series of cases. It's super interesting what you're getting into because of the way they may all be connected. So I'll let you share a little bit about what you're doing.
Our cases all happened back in 1990, around the time of Memorial Day. Their names are Pedron Koski, Chris Temple, and Connie Lynn Royce. They all went missing from the East Lansing area, and two of those have a real chance to be connected. They were both pretty blonde women who went missing out of nowhere. All three of these people just up and disappeared. You would believe they were just taken by aliens or something. There was no evidence, and so it's been really difficult for us to investigate, especially 30 years later. There is no evidence, and there was none back then.
So if you're not able to, in those cases, to really get a lot of evidence to investigate to solve the case, what do you hope to accomplish by presenting these stories?
The one thing I really want to accomplish, even if I can't find a suspect or put someone in prison or get closure of any sort, I want people to know these stories. I want these people to be known and their voices to be heard, especially the case of Chris Temple, because even back when he went missing, no one helped. There wasn't a lot of media coverage. There wasn't much of anything, even help from the police. I'm actually reading a memoir written by his father right now, and it is heartbreaking to hear the treatment that the family had to deal with. And even if it is after the fact, I hope to bring his dead father closure by ensuring that more people know about Chris and the pain that that family went through.
And that may be all it takes. You know, a lot of times in these old missing persons cases, particularly ones that happened long ago when there wasn't things like social media, and in particular cases like Chris's, where he didn't get any even legacy media attention at the time. He was a troubled kid, and so nobody really seemed to care about at the time that this young boy went missing. So sometimes just putting that story out and putting the exposure on it will possibly draw up new leads. I promise you, no one has ever heard a whole podcast series about Chris Temple's disappearance. I'm assuming most of you listening to this right now have never heard of that case. And so Gracie's done a fantastic job along with her group of compiling a lot of information and putting it together. One thing that you just mentioned, I want to talk to particularly Chelsea and Stephanie about. One fun thing with the process, well, and some of Lexi too just went through this. Well, all of you guys have. So they spent all this time researching these cases and got their scripts done and then recorded the scripts and started editing. And then things change. This is the reality of working in journalism. Things change. So either one of you guys, what happened with you guys after you had your whole script done and ready to go?
So after we got like script one basically fully done and script two, Jeanette Robertson's sister, every year they have a walk for her. And we went up there and we got so much audio, so much interview, answers and all this stuff. We had to go back through and like change basically all of our scripts because it was all done.
Yeah, because you guys not only interviewed family members like Stephanie was talking about, but you also interviewed the lead detective on the case and got a lot of information. And that was kind of cool for me to watch that two-way street start to develop between you guys where, you know, you're interviewing him, but then you've also opened that door of communication with him where he's willing to listen to you guys give suggestions because, I mean, Chelsea thinks she's got it solved.
No, I do. Like, no spoilers, but it is solved. I have it.
And I actually tend to think that her hunch is right. We'll see where it goes. But we did learn from talking to the detective that the direction that you guys and your group is looking is the opposite direction of where the initial investigators were looking. And that maybe ended up being a big break in the case. You guys also got Chelsea filed. That was one of the cases there's actually a book about Jeanette's case called Redacted.
Jenny Decker.
Yep. And Jenny has helped us out a lot, too. And she talked to you guys. But the book was called Redacted because no one could get the case file. Like they'd file FOIA requests. They wouldn't send it. And what they would send was fully redacted, literally pages of black redaction. And then sophomore Chelsea wrote a FOIA request. And what'd you get?
I got a 166 page case file.
That's right. Yeah, she was able to accomplish what, as far as I know, no one else in the media has ever been able to accomplish. And she got but that came after you guys had script written, too.
Oh, yeah. Right after script one was mm-hmm. finished, that came in. And then now recently, I've requested another one. Still haven't gotten anything back from that.
But they approved it. They haven't sent it yet. And that was us. You guys were kind of sweet talking the detective when we were there. We asked him, what about the crime scene photos? You know, who gets it? And he said, well, those requests come to me to approve who gets them and who doesn't. And then was it you that asked or who asked him that said, well, if we send one, will you give them to us?
It was Chelsea.
Yeah. I was like, so if you get another one, you might want to approve that.
Yeah. And sure enough, she came right back and filed the FOIA request and they approved it. So now we have even more coming. Luckily, the plan is to try and put out another two or three episodes and another wave of episodes after these come out. Alexandra, you guys were working on your case and you actually had you were like last week ready to start putting the episodes out and something happened in your case.
Alexander, Andrew and Tanner Skelton, they were all three declared dead by a judge last week as of November 26, 2013, I think.
They did five.
I think 2015.
Yeah, because yes, they did 5 years after they went missing.
Yeah. And so we're thinking that they're going to use that as kind of a diving board to jump off and charge John, their father, with something further because he was only charged for 3 counts of unlawful imprisonment and he's still serving time in prison for that, but he's supposed to get out this November.
Yeah. So there's just a development in the story. And then Gracie has already been planning for what cases they're going to cover for their next group of episodes. And she and I were on the computer doing some research about one of the cases. And what did we find?
We found out that her killer, again, almost 30 years later, was actually apprehended. Well, a man that they really think was her killer, which makes a phone call that I got. It makes so much sense. I was on the way home from school, and I got a phone call in response to the FOIA request that I had just sent, which was a pain to do because I couldn't figure out what agency to submit it to.
Right.
There was so many different places I could have submitted it to. So I ended up sending like 5 identical FOIA requests to all of these different places. And I got a call back saying that it was the proper jurisdiction, but they just couldn't release anything. That was the first time that I had ever gotten a phone call in response. Mm-hmm. Usually I would just get an email or something. And I was really caught off guard by it. And come to find out, it was because the police had a suspect in mind. They had been staking out this man's house, trying to get DNA and find a way to connect him to this crime.
Yeah. And that could be huge because the premise and the theory that you're working on is that these cases that you're covering may all be connected. So that we can, again, may open up that two-way street of communication where we can, you know, maybe suggest to the state police that maybe run that DNA against these other cases.
It'll be a really interesting story, even if they aren't connected, because it's so crazy to consider that your neighbor that you know so well just committed this random one-off act of violence.
Right.
And then that was it. It's crazy no matter how you look at it.
Yeah. And it was also like the time, again, 30 years later, and we pulled up a search and it was like, and remember, we're like, why are all these people all of a sudden today? It was like that day posting on the wall, because like 2 days before that, they had made an arrest in the case. So again, that's production. And then Lexi, your group ran into a similar issue, not of getting FOIA requests, but you found a new witness.
So when going through news stories, there was an interview with Stephen's cousin, Jason, and we were able to contact him. And the stuff that he told us goes against a lot of what we've heard and learned. So trying to decipher what did happen, what didn't happen, and where emotions come into play to skew the narrative is a bit hard.
Yeah, because, well, in the narrative in that case, that's another one where nobody's releasing any case files on it. So it's hard to find any real information. So you start talking to family members. And I think a lot of the groups have learned family members are usually very sure about a particular thing or a thing that happened. They're positive about it. You've witnessed it in your guys' case. You've witnessed it in your case. And yours seems, I mean, she's probably right. Everybody seems. But yeah, you have to. And that was in the Janice Sanders and Denise Lang's case was the same thing. You know, they went and they had done all their research. They really thought they had a good beat on the case. They went and interviewed the suspect's son and walked away going, oh, he didn't do it. He was actually a really good guy. And I'm like, okay, but now let's look back at the actual evidence we have. And they're like, oh, maybe not. But then they interviewed the victim's son, and then they had a whole different perspective. And like, you interviewed Stephen's sister and got one perspective, and then interviewed the cousin and got a completely different perspective. And that's the hard part about this job, is like piecing all that together and finding out where the truth lies somewhere in between there. So overall, has this been a good experience for you guys? How do you feel about this whole process?
It's been a really good experience. I mean, we've gotten to learn a bunch of new skills. We are all working so hard every day to try to make a difference in the world and to these missing people who have like no attention at all. Like, people don't even know these people existed, or these people are missing and they've been missing for like 10 plus years. And they have no idea. So at least we're making a difference in the world, and we're trying every day to just to do our best and try to make sure these people get at least awareness or justice.
I feel the same. It's been a very positive impact on everyone in this class, but for me in a very personal manner. Like I said, I went through a lot of personal growth, but this class has been a real opportunity for me to just go out there and, like you said, Stephanie, make a difference in the world. I feel like I'm actually contributing to something bigger than myself, and that's really important to me.
I feel as though we're giving a real voice to the voiceless, especially in the case of the three Skelton brothers. They were 5, 7, and 9. They didn't have a chance to grow and create themselves and become members of society. And I think that through this, we're able to give them the voices that they deserve and the closure that their family deserves.
So many, as Stephanie said, so many of these stories are unknown. And humans, we're all human. We all interact with each other. And even if you're no longer there to participate in everybody's lives, you should still be remembered. You should still be known. And when that's taken away from you and nobody knows about it, that's something that shouldn't happen. People shouldn't be taken away. And giving these people a story, a way to exist outside their families, a way to exist outside of just their community, it's important.
One quote from Lena, which is Jeanette's sister, she was talking about how these were all humans. They were humans. They didn't deserve to be taken or become voiceless. Everyone that after listening to all these others cases, they were silenced in a way. They were lost in media. Nobody really, not just with my case, but looking at everyone else's case, they're not one of those cases you hear about like on TikTok, on Instagram, that are like really popular. and everyone's looking at them. No, these cases, eyes were turned away from it. And I feel like this class, it's not only benefiting us, it's benefiting those communities who have lost someone. And I'm really happy that I was like able to take this class, because I really want all these people, all these families to get their closure that they've been needing for years.
I think these families, or these people, were giving them a voice and allowing them to be more than just what happened to them. And I think that we need to focus on their lives and everything that happened apart from the horrible things that we're discussing here. And I think that they deserve to be remembered as more than just what happened to them.
Another thing about this podcast is we're not only trying to make their voices heard, but we're also trying to make our voices heard, because in our generation, we're just thought of as, you just see all these clips of our generation just being troublemakers, just making bad decisions. And that's what people make us out to be, people that aren't capable of anything. And through this, we are showing them that you're not only underestimating us, but you're also turning your backs away just like you did to these people. And we're trying our best to put these people into light, because they don't get the attention they deserve. But on top of that, we also don't get that attention. We're put out to be just horrible people. And through this podcast, we're showing multiple different voices, just all of us, just trying to prove ourselves and try to spread awareness from these people who were silenced.
All right. I think that's, I'm sitting here crying my eyes out in front. Don't you tell those yahoos in there. But I just want to say, guys, if anybody listening to this, if you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to the Underestimated podcast. These students are doing incredible work. Alexander's group covering the Skelton brothers, their first episode dropped. They've got three more to come on that case. And then you're going to hear about all these cases we go on. And I'm just super, super proud of all of you guys and all the work that everybody's done. Oh, I got to not cry. Oh, thanks, guys. But really, and even just seeing how much this is really impacting you guys on a deep emotional level it's awesome. So love you guys. Everybody tune in to the Underestimated podcast, even if you have to skip mine. Check theirs out.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.